right. Welcome to another episode of the Noble and Roosh Show, brought to you by Ball is Life. I'm one of your hosts, Roosh Williams, along with my man, Zach Noble. And today we are joined by a special guest, Mr. Harrison Fagan. How you doing, Harrison?
You know, I'm doing good. It's been like an exhausting last couple days covering a team that just won the championship, but also like a really fun time to actually be doing this as my job. So I can't complain. Like, I mean, I'm excited for like the actual full off season to hit for a little bit before free agency and the draft really get underway. But you know, I've never covered a good Lakers team, so this has been a blast for me.
So talk to us a little bit more about why it's been a blast, and simultaneously maybe why it's also been exhausting.
Well, so, you know, it's been a blast just because, like, my first day writing about basketball at all was the day Dwight Howard left the Lakers. So, like, if you can imagine that. Yeah, like, I have not covered a great era for watching Lakers basketball. You know, usually you'd get, you know, you got the first 20 games where, like, okay, it's all new. There's new players to kind of look for. And then after that, it's like, okay, they're losing the same ways over and over and over again. And then you get like your scattered kind of fun, get your Jody Meeks, like 50 point game or, you know, whatever, Kobe's final game. Like there are ones that you remember, the D'Angelo Russell game winner, but for the most part, like not a lot of memorable, good, fun basketball to watch. Just a lot of like losing in the same ways over and over again. And then they get LeBron, and I'm like, okay, that is all over. I'm excited. I'm covering a winning team. I'm covering a, you know, at least sort of a contender, like a team that's probably going to make the playoffs that first year. And then they don't. And I begin to start to think, like, okay, am I the problem? Like, is it a curse where this team just can't be good as long as I cover them? Like, at what point are people going to realize that and, like, try and get me fired? And so I was, you know, no one was more thankful than me to actually get to watch like a good team. And, you know, it was a new experience getting to write about like actual basketball and like find basketball angles to cover other than like this team is so terrible. So that was fun. And just like, honestly, this playoff run was kind of incredible. Even for, I'd say I was probably a bigger optimist about the Lakers' chances going into the postseason than most people were just from watching this team all year. But just like, how much they just completely destroyed every single team that they played, except for Miami, which even Miami, when they really turned the gas on, they were able to kind of take care of things easily. You know, it was just a lot of fun to do that. And the exhausting part just comes from there's a lot of writing that goes into covering a competitive team, a lot of podcasting, a lot going on. There's a lot more for me as someone who runs a blog that aggregates news as well. It means a lot more paying attention to stuff because there's a lot more reporters writing about this team and reporting on this team. So it's like maybe not 24/7, but probably like 23/6 type of a job. And so like covering a title run was even more so. And I'm definitely ready for a break. But again, like I can't complain too much. It's been a lot of fun.
So lifelong Lakers fan, right?
Yes, I grew up in Orange County and I started watching the team in like 2001, I would say, was when I really started to get into basketball. And I remember like the first game that I can remember sitting on the edge of my seat for was the Ori game winner against the Kings. And that was the shot that like made me a like lifelong basketball fan. I was like, this is the greatest feeling in the world. I want to watch this team forever. And, you know, like covering the team kind of takes some of the diehard out of you. Like I'm not going to sit there and like get upset over like every single win and loss and whatever. But like as somebody who, you know, has definitely an affinity for this team over any other one, like getting to watch them win a title and like a team that's this, I think, you know, just likable and like in terms of how they were winning, in terms of like buying in on defense and winning in the type of ways that you can appreciate if you're watching them game to game. Like, I think it was just a lot of fun. Yeah.
Kind of to the spirit of what Harrison was talking about, basically Laker fans, there's a whole segment of Laker fans that are just now discovering what it's like to win a title. And on the flip side of that, there's a lot of Laker fans that are for the first time understanding what it's like to be completely irrelevant for a decade, right?
Yes,
a lot of franchises go through that. You know, a lot of small market teams, maybe if you're from Charlotte, right, you're going to have you've had misery over the years. Washington, for example, you know, you just always at best you've been like a middling team at best, and typically you're just not really in the race. And we saw the Lakers kind of in that role pretty much since, I don't know, 2010.
I mean, they lost second round in 2011. Like, a lot of people thought they were going to maybe three-peat, but Dallas swept them. And then they had the Nash-Dwight year, obviously, that everybody thought they were going to be really good, but they ended up, like, barely making the playoffs. But after that is when the real, like, basketball, like, that, you know, I believe that was the 2013 playoffs, if I'm remembering correctly, was after that, that's when, like, the real drought started, when it got really bad.
Yeah, so it's just been interesting for me to see you know, just kind of the contrast, right? Like, because on one hand, you're winning your first title. Oh, my God, this is awesome. And on the other hand, there's a whole generation of Lakers fans that, you know, are just like, wow, finally. Like, because, I went to the University of Texas, for example, and Texas is supposed to be powerhouse in football. But we have not been pretty much since around the same time that the Lakers kind of faded into irrelevancy. And so, I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things. Has that been, like, your experience? Because you said since 2001. So that means you would have came in the three-peat.
Yeah, no, I'm a child of the three-peat era and then the Kobe and Pau years. And I'm a child of Lakers exceptionalism for sure. And so it was weird, definitely, for me covering a team that just, like, for lack of a better term, just sucked for, like, a lot of years. Like they weren't just, like, mediocre, like, have a chance to make the playoffs, just kind of barely missing it, like the Suns were for a couple of years, or like Miami the last couple of years before they broke through this year. Like they weren't, like, that level of, like, kind of uninteresting bad. Like, they were still okay and somewhat competent. They were, like, bad. Like, we're talking, like, that is easily the worst stretch in Lakers franchise history, to go, I believe it's to go 7-year playoff drought, 10, like, you know, the team had never missed the playoffs, I think, twice in a row in their entire franchise history before that. You know, like, you're talking about, like, you know, there are Lakers fans that have never seen the team win a title. I was, you know, I've been joking, and some of my friends have been joking about, like, yeah, they're 10-year-old Laker kids, that Laker fan kids,
for
that
sure
didn't know what a title tasted like until now. Like, they, you know, those are the real, like, those are the people that really suffered. But, you know, in all seriousness, like, I think it's been interesting to watch Laker fans react to this, because, you know, while obviously everyone was excited over every title that the team has ever won, because everybody's always excited about a championship, I do think that there's a greater appreciation for this team from the fan base, just in the sense of, like, they've learned what suffering actually is. And while I know that small market fans would be like, no, you don't, like, 7 years is not suffering, like Kings fans would take exception to that, Lakers fans have learned what it's like to have a truly bad team. And I think because of that, and also to have multiple just disappointing teams, like, as a result of all that, like, they, I think, appreciate the way that this team went about its business more. Like, it wasn't a favorite, like, you know, right? I mean, it was one of the favorites, but it wasn't the odds-on top favorite necessarily in the eyes of every analyst from the start of the year. And just, like, winning with defense, this is the most, like, defensively bought in Lakers team that I can remember and probably ever. I think there's just more of an, and, you know, to say nothing of everything that all of us, like, as a planet, and then also, like, as the Lakers community have went through over the last year, like, you know, I think that there's just more of an appreciation for how good this team is, how hard they played, and actually going out and getting it done, I think, resonates with people more. Having gone through the basketball struggles, the real life struggles, like, you know, in a year 2020, like, we've never seen before really in human history, I think all of it led to a little bit more jubilation, at least online, than I can remember seeing in the past.
So, Harrison, tell me this. I mean, you were out at Manhattan Beach last night, you said?
Yes, yeah.
Roosh, did you get out at all? Did you get out and explore the sights at all?
Oh, to celebrate? No. Not at all.
All right, Harrison, what was it like? What were the streets like last night?
So I did not, to be clear, I did not go to the celebration or anything, like, at Staples Center and all that. Like, we drove past the practice facility on our way to Manhattan Beach, just because I wanted to see, like, are people congregating there? It's like, is that kind of like, because LA Live was, I don't know if you guys saw footage, but there were not enough people in masks at that celebration. At LA Live and outside Staples Center. I'm, like, a little nervous about that. LA may have set itself back in terms of coronavirus numbers over the last, I mean, I understand that people were excited, but also it still is a pandemic going on, which is why the Lakers are not going to be having a parade anytime soon, for the reason that we just saw over the weekend. But I just went to Manhattan Beach and was just, like, walking around in, like, the suburbs and whatever. Like, there was almost no one out. Like, it was like it was just trying to get out and get some exercise. But yeah, I did not go and hit the streets to celebrate the title. I'm not trying to catch coronavirus or anything, or
I'd risk it all for a Timberwolves title. Let's be honest. I'd risk it all. You can
look.
You can take my digits.
I'm not going to say that that's warranted. Yeah, I'm not going to say that's warranted, but also, like, I feel I would judge you less harshly than I would, like, Lakers fans, you know, that have only gone through, like, 10 years without a title. Fair. Like, Timberwolves is, you know, again, I'm not going to justify going out and putting yourself in the community at risk, but I'd probably get it a little more.
So being a lifelong Timberwolves fan, and Roosh has had some wealth over there. I mean, I don't feel bad for either of you guys, and some little heartbreaks in the playoffs or any ups and downs and trying to get back to a championship after 7 years. I'm not going to shed any tears for you guys, but I get it. I get the journey. It is pretty impressive, and it's wild to think a team in a market like that in today's day and age in the NBA could struggle for so long. And it's crazy what the player empowerment does, and LeBron bringing an AD, and it's crazy how analysts and fans and just people in general overthink the NBA. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to go crazy that I just predicted this thing from the beginning. And like, as soon as that AD trade happened, I told everybody, it's like, it doesn't matter who they bring in. LeBron is still good enough. He's still the best player in the league when he's healthy. And then you bring in another arguable top seven guy at the time, and LeBron will turn him into a top five guy. It's a league of talent, and where you don't have any super teams right now, people try to overthink this and try to get creative and come out with this answer out of nowhere. Like, they should have been heavily favored. I mean, it should have been such an easy pick. Like, I personally believed in the role players a lot more. That's where people are trying to put the pieces together. I don't know about you guys. Where were you guys at the beginning with this team? I predicted the Lakers would roll all the way to the end, but also I predicted the finals in six games. I predicted the finals, and I said that we'd only get one or two good games. So I will pat myself on the back a little bit, but the NBA is not that complicated unless you really try to overthink it.
Yeah, I mean, look, one thing for me, honestly, if we're being frank, this is one of my least favorite finals runs ever, possibly. Maybe the least favorite ever, at least in modern history, because on the eastern side of the bracket, I thought it was great. I thought it was awesome. On the western side of the bracket, we never really saw the juggernaut take, like, the best shot, right? I mean, they got Portland. Everyone was high on Portland.
Zach, yeah, hold on. That best eight seed ever they had to take on.
No. Look, Zach will probably remember. Anyone that thought that was the best eight seed ever was completely buying into the hype and did not know what the thrill was about. Right? And then in addition to that, CJ had a hurt back, like, on top of that. But if you watch the Blazers, you knew they don't play defense. Yep. They ride Dame, which he's not going to ride them. You're not going to ride Dame past the Lakers. And in addition to that, that week where, you know, they were having a great week. Oh, they were on fire. Everyone loved it. Yeah, they got into the playoffs by squeaking past the Nets, who were injury riddled and COVID withdrawn, you know, half of their roster. And then they also barely got past the Grizzlies, who had injury Triple J's out, right? So, like, they had injuries of their own. Portland was not good. Houston, I'm biased. I'm from Houston, Harrison. If you don't know that, I'm a Houston guy. I'm a Rockets guy. I'm biased. I was hoping that there was some matchup advantage that the Rockets could exploit. How injured Russell Westbrook was, we don't really know. I think it had something to do with his performance.
Yeah, and he didn't play the way he did at the
end. We
get it, what you're trying to do. You're going to diminish this championship, and I'm not going to let you do that.
No. I'm not diminishing.
LeBron earned a very easy path to the finals, and he got it. He earned every break he got after making it 10 times. He deserved a cakewalk.
But I'm not saying that it should be diminished. I'm just saying we never got to see them take their best shot. That's what disappoints me about.
Nobody
right?
got it.
We didn't get to see the Clippers take their swing, and we got the five seed out of the East, which, again, I loved it. Like, I love the run. Big fan of those Heat, but obviously we'd have rather probably seen, you know, Giannis and Milwaukee if they were the truth, which we can have that discussion. They were not the truth, and for good reason. But we never really got to see LA take their best shot. Even in the finals, Dragic was out, right? And I mean, he came back at the end. You know, she tried, but he wasn't 100%.
Honestly, so much respect to him for, like, even giving that a shot. Like, I mean, I feel like 99% of people could not have even gone out there and played. Like, I that was incredible.
Yeah, and so to wrap a little bow on what I'm trying to say, from the jump, as soon as they traded for AD, anyone who has been watching basketball knows you put LeBron James and Anthony Davis together, and it really doesn't matter who they have. They're going to be a top three contender no matter what. And people were writing Rajon Rondo off, which I thought was surprising, because he was huge for them. I think they would have had a tougher time with Houston if they did not have Rondo, and they might have had a tougher time in general because his additional playmaking was so huge. They got Danny Green, who's one of the best role players in the league still, whether he missed that open shot or not.
Don't tell Lakers fans that. I'm just saying, don't try and convince them of that.
I thought that was absurd because it's like, look, he missed the shot. He's not going to hit the Robert Horry. Oh, my God. But he's still
Yeah, the thing, like, that was Markieff's mistake more than it was Dan. Like, Danny just – he missed an open shot. I mean, that happens. Like, it sucks, and he's paid to make shots, and nobody realizes that more than him. But, like, Markieff just threw the ball out of bounds, like, with a title on the line. Like I'm not trying to, like, hammer him either. Like, everybody makes mistakes, but, like, that was the more indefensible mistake there, not, like, Dan – but anyway –
should LeBron have taken that shot?
Look, I see it both ways, okay? On one hand, you could say, yes, he should have taken the shot. On the other hand, Danny Green was wide-ass open. So, like, I think both are good plays, you know? I thought that debate was so stupid. Whether LeBron takes that shot or not, like, he's capable of hitting it. He was contested. I still think he could hit it, but he was contested. So the right play, you have a guy like Danny Green who's a veteran, who's won two titles, been there, done that, hit a ton of big shots. He's wide open. It wasn't in his shooting pocket because it was like an off-balance kind of whip back, but I have no issue with LeBron passing that ball. No.
Now, hold on.
I'm not mad.
I want to say that I agree, but I need to go back to the asterisk, like, easiest title run ever discussion for just a quick second. Like, so
No. I didn't say it was the easiest. I just said it was my least favorite.
Okay.
All right, that's a little more fair. Like, especially if you're a Rockets fan, I can see why you wouldn't necessarily enjoy that title run. Like, that said, you know, everybody was hyping up the Blazers, and I'm with you. Like, I was like, okay, this is a completely fraudulent Blazers team, and, like, everybody liked it because Dame is fun to watch, and he's hitting big shots and whatever, but, like, they won their last, like, three games by, like, six total points to barely squeak into the postseason. Like, that did not feel like a team that could threaten the Lakers, and the Lakers, like, beat their will to win out of them by, like, the halfway through game four. Like, you could tell Portland just rolled over and was done. Then you come against the Rockets, and you talked about maybe can they create some, like, matchup problems, whatever. The Lakers downshifted and beat the Rockets at their own game. And then against Denver, who had just beaten the Clippers, who everybody was hyping up all year as a team that was better than the Lakers, come back from down 3-1 against them, came and, like, they gave the Lakers a good shot, but the Lakers, like, again, like, just put, like, you know, just strangled the life out of their offense and, like, you know, was able to score on them pretty much at will for the most part, especially AD. And then you get to the finals, and, like, I agree with you that Dragic made the Heat worse, like, losing him, but I'm also not sure that, like, the series would have been that different. I feel like the Lakers
It wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, like, the Lakers, I picked them in six with Miami healthy, and, like, I think that they would have been able to pull that off, like, just because, for the simple fact that, like, they only really tried in, I would say, game one, game, like, probably game three, and then game six. And games one and six were the only games where they really turned it on for the entire game. Like, they were clearly playing with their food. And, like, you know, to the point of we never got to see them take the best shot, like, I'm not so sure that we didn't get to see them take the best shot and that they weren't just so good that it just didn't look like it. Like, you know, that Heat team made the Bucks look like they were nothing. And, like, beat the Celtics pretty easily, too. Like, that was a good team. And Denver was able to come back from down 3-1 against the Clippers. Like, it's not the Lakers' fault that the Clippers and Bucks were frauds. Like, you know, those teams, I don't think that necessarily they were the best two teams in the league to challenge the Lakers. I think we just thought that going in. And so, like, I don't think that we can really, you know, like downplay what the Lakers did just because the other two teams that everybody was hyping up all year didn't necessarily live up to expectations.
Well, to be fair, though, when I say we didn't see them take their best shot, that's not, again, it's not downplaying the Lakers. It's just saying that
we never,
it's like if you're watching Game of Thrones, like if we would have never gotten the, oh God, the
Battle of the Bastards.
The Mountain. The Mountain versus, what the heck? The Hound, right?
I'm not a throner.
You're not a throner. Well, look, it's like an anticipated matchup. It's like how we never got Kobe LeBron in the finals, right?
Right.
We wanted that so bad we never got to see
it. I feel you. Yeah, I think I get what you're saying.
But to play a little devil's advocate here, though, I think that the worst, going off memory, one of the worst finals or one of the easiest finals runs in recent memory is Golden State's first one. We could talk about that if you'd like. But 2015, you know, they played, every point guard they played was injured. And then they got to LeBron, and Kyrie and Love were both out. The only reason I might say this one's a little easier is because this team had LeBron and didn't have to go against LeBron. But to all those points, look, the basketball is all about matchups, man. So was Denver the best matchup for the Lakers? Even though they beat the Clippers, I still think the Clippers were the better team and the better matchup. The only thing that really showed to contest with what the Lakers do was size, athleticism, and star power. And I think we would have seen that with the Clippers. They had like the 6'8 body type and the length across the board to match up with them. They also had pests and defensive guys, complete defensive guys like Leonard, Paul George, Pat Bev, because the Lakers had the best defense. None of the teams they went against had as incredible of defense, in my opinion. And then with the Bucks, if they would have seen
the
Bucks.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
They have a
other than maybe the Heat.
Yeah. I don't think they had the size across the board. I think they were a little too small.
Yeah, I think they were a little small to deal with what the Lakers presented. But, right. I mean, to be fair, that's most teams.
I personally
think
that's
what I'm saying. We never got to see the teams, you know?
Right. Go. I personally think the Heat are the best team in the East on this playoffs. Like, I think we've never seen peak Giannis and peak Bucks in the playoffs, so they don't exist. We just have never seen it. They've never been able to play playoff basketball at their peak, so rule them out. The Celtics, sure, they didn't have Gordon Hayward, but are they still going to beat the Heat? I don't think so. I mean, the way the Heat were playing and rolling, I mean, the depth in that team was phenomenal. I just think we got the best team in the finals, but I do agree with everything else you're saying there. What do you guys think? Do you think if Gordon Hayward would have made the difference, you think we're missing something where
the
best team in the East?
I think the only team realistically that was going to take the Lakers out was going to be the Clippers. Realistically. I mean, I don't think.
Right, I agree with that.
Honestly, I don't want to make this like a first take thing, but I think honestly we saw that they didn't have the heart to do it. I think that team was a little bit of like, I think they were a little bit prone to front running. And I think that.
Well, they didn't deserve to be there. Absolutely not.
I think that's fair, and I do think that I agree with you that they match up with the Lakers better than the Nuggets did, because the Nuggets were like, they were a good team, but they were a bad match. Like, the Lakers were a bad matchup for them in terms of like, they didn't really have anyone for that could defend LeBron type of stuff. Like I get what you're saying, and that the Clippers had more of those bodies to throw. But I also think like the Clippers did not have an answer for Anthony Davis, and I'm not sure that like, I think that would have been the difference in that series. And like, you know, we saw the Lakers tie them like regular season wise. Like, we know that like the Lakers could have beat them and beat them in the more recent two games. Like, I think that given what we saw from the Clippers and how they kind of folded, like, I'm not sure that they had it in them, at least this year, to beat them. Like, I mean, obviously losing in the playoffs can change things. That can change prep, but like, that was a team that barely practiced. That was a team that like load managed all year, didn't really keep their foot on the gas, didn't play their best lineups together. Like, they just did not prepare for the playoffs. And we'll see if this next coach that they have can actually do that. But I just don't think that they were set up like culturally to be able to compete.
So Denver, again, I'm a Rockets fan, right? So I watched the Rockets work the Nuggets primarily because Jokic is flat-footed.
Yeah.
So when he's dealing with a big that's long, tall, and has ups, can get vertical, he's really useless, especially in pick and rolls. Not useless, but defensively, he's a negative.
Yeah, defensively, he's not a helpful presence. I agree.
Right. So you match that up against Anthony Davis, and there's a huge problem, right? I don't think that there is theoretically an answer for Anthony Davis, but the Clippers have, like, even Zubac is a little more light of foot, a little bigger. Even if you downsize from Zubac and you go Montrezl Harrell, you can still run Kawhi and Paul George. Like, are they going to stop Anthony Davis? No, but do they make the nature of the matchup completely different? I think so. We saw, I don't remember what the score was for the Lakers-Clippers matchups throughout the season, but if memory serves correctly, I'm pretty sure they were all close. And the ones that weren't close were not close in favor of the Clippers.
I believe the only one that turned into a blowout was opening night. And I think that was just in the fourth quarter, the Clippers kind of ran away. I think other than that, if I'm remembering correctly, all the games were really close.
Harrison, was the Lakers your pick from the beginning?
No, to be honest. I had picked the Bucks, and Lakers.
I appreciate that.
I was,
from the beginning of the season or the beginning of the playoffs?
Beginning of the season, beginning of the playoffs, I was picking the Lakers by that point because I was like, it was essentially early on in the season. What I thought was maybe possible, and I actually wrote a story, it's my pinned tweet, people can check it out, like from early in the season, and it aged, I think, better than anything I've ever written, because it was basically about the Lakers' plan to establish an elite defense. And I remember like Jared Dudley talking to me in training camp, kind of like wide-eyed about how good LeBron had been on defense. And I was like, okay, like he might be pumping up his guy. Like, I remember seeing, like, hearing Frank Vogel talk, hearing Dwight Howard talk, Avery Bradley talk, like all these guys talk about it. And I'm like, okay, they're saying the right things about what they're focused on, but like let's see it. Like, I had questions about the personnel. I had questions about, is LeBron actually going to try that hard on defense after kind of watching him the prior year? Like, you know, I was skeptical a little bit, but it was probably like, I would say 10, 15 games into the season, I was like, oh, actually, like, this defense is really, really good, and they actually, like, might really be a problem. And I think that was the point where I started saying, like, I think I started saying, I'm pretty sure this team can win a title. This team will win a title until probably, like, the first round of the playoffs, and I saw what they were doing to the Blazers.
I wasn't at this team will win a title until it was pretty clear that they were the one seed and everyone else was fighting for 2 through 8.
Yeah.
And we had enough on paper statistically to see that the defense was for real. Because if you give LeBron James and Anthony Davis, first of all, they're the only tandem of two top five players that we have in the league. And one of them is LeBron freaking James. So advantage immediately. And then you pair that with a top 10 defense. Because I think if you go back, I think till 1996, maybe somewhere around there, any team that does not have LeBron James or the Shaq and Kobe duo had a top either 11 or 12 defense to make the finals. There's only two exceptions, and they're both late 90s. Like, I think it was the Pacers against
the
Lakers.
That is a crazy stat.
Yeah, I think it was the Lakers against – or the Pacers against the Lakers, and then one of the Jazz teams against the Bulls. But my point is, you combine arguably the greatest player of all time in LeBron James with another fellow top five player who's actually bigger than him, and then you give them the backdrop of a top 10 defense, it's really difficult to see them losing. I always tell people – you know, a lot of Rockets fans on Twitter kind of took the angle, hey, LeBron's old, it's not the same, we can run them off the court, blah, blah, blah. And I always told everyone, look, I bet against LeBron James enough to know that you don't bet against LeBron James.
Yeah,
and
no.
We saw that.
I think I remember when they made the Anthony Davis trade, and there were a lot of Lakers fans, because, like, people get attached to their young players. Like, I'm sure both of you have felt this about, like, your young guy. Like, oh, this is the next guy. Like, they're going to break through. We've watched them grow. We know them better than anyone. Like, you know, and so I think obviously every fan was excited to get Anthony Davis, but there were fans who felt like the Lakers gave up too much to go and get him. And the thing that I kept saying was, like, I don't know that you can, when you have LeBron James on your roster already, like, I mean, outside of the completely unreasonable, I don't know that you can give up too much for Anthony Davis, for the simple reason, it's not just the two top five players that you mentioned. It's the fact that Anthony Davis is, like, tailor-made to be made better by LeBron, and that he also covers up for LeBron's weaknesses. This is, you know, I'd argue that it's the best duo that LeBron's ever been a part of. And I think that it's definitely the best fitting duo that he's ever been a part of, in terms of, like, these are two guys where you don't have to be like, okay, like, it's your turn, my turn a little bit. Like, how are they going to make each other better? There were zero questions about that as soon as they made the trade about exactly how they were going to make each other better. It was one of the best finishers in NBA history, playing with arguably the best passer in NBA history, like, if not, like, at least a top two, top three passer in NBA history. And it's two guys with size and, like, that are still at the tops of their game. And, like, you know, I think you're right about sometimes we outsmart ourselves by, like, we all try to learn, like, we want to figure out which role players are going to be good. And, like, we want to all, like, sound smart when we're talking about basketball. And I think sometimes
they don't
we outsmart
need to
ourselves.
Fit when you have LeBron and Anthony Davis. They don't.
And
need
the,
to
but
fit.
The thing
they
is they got guys that did fit too.
They just have to be good enough and willing.
Yeah.
They fit because they were the right personnel to play defense when LeBron said it's time to play defense. And that's how we're going to identify ourselves this year. Call me crazy, but I think the Last Dance had a part of why LeBron wanted to buckle down and show his defensive side of things too. I know he had the – I know
he was
heard
playing
the
defense
talk.
Before the Last Dance came out, to be fair.
He that's – I say no matter what, all time, we're not going to get too far into this, but he's behind Jordan in number one defense. That's first and foremost. I mean, not having a defense – the player of the year award, not making all defense as much as Jordan, just not being a consistent as good of defender as Jordan. And sure, say what you want, versatility, that doesn't make up for what he is as a defender. Second, post game, mid range, and then mentality. Those things, LeBron will never catch MJ, but where he does is longevity, okay, and just being great for so long. And I've always said this, if he gets five, he's my GOAT, but until then, I need five. That's it. That's all I'm asking. It's so hard not to say it with four, though, and doing it on three teams. I mean, that longevity is insane, but so many players are going to prolong their careers if they want to in today's day and age. It's just science. It's math. It's just the way it's going to go. But yeah.
Like Jordan was a pinnacle of that, like for his time. It's just that the science has gotten better in terms of how to train your body and like make it better for stuff like that. But he early pioneered that.
Because of Anthony Davis. And because of the role he played, like offensively, like LeBron didn't really decide to, he only had one 40-point game in the entire playoffs this year. That's never really happened. And he chose, I mean, and he lost that game. First of all, he lost that game, and he still didn't continue to drive, still didn't continue to bang bodies. I mean, he was able to rely on Anthony Davis. That's why it's such a perfect fit for him, and it's going to prolong his career even more to have. There's no better fit in the league than him. I don't know. Tell me what you
I don't know that there are two stars in the league that fit together better than those two. Like, I mean, maybe there are others that you could make an argument for, but I don't think that I see it.
I was going to say, I think it'd be interesting to see if they're fully healthy. Steph and Clay, you want to talk about two people that fit each other perfectly.
That's fair. That's probably the only two that can even come close to touching it.
Steph and Clay. And I mean, maybe I'm a little biased.
Not good enough.
That first year of Harden.
They just have more depth.
That first year of Harden and Chris Paul was perfect, by the way. But yeah, I mean, look, to the point of what you're saying, I agree with everything both of you said. They fit perfectly. They're tailor-made for one another. It's probably the best duo LeBron's ever been a part of. The GOAT discussion is one that we don't have enough time for. We'll never have enough time for. Do I think the Last Dance influenced LeBron? Absolutely, man. When I saw the Lakers in, like, mash mode, I immediately thought, Jordan is watching this thinking, damn it, we should not have released that yet.
I actually completely think the opposite. I think Jordan felt threatened about LeBron's legacy a little bit when
that's why he released it when he did.
He agreed to make the documentary on the day the Cavs won the title. We're celebrating winning the 2016 title. Like, I mean, he clearly felt like LeBron was starting to come for him a little bit, nip at his heels at the very least. Like,
well, I'm not saying that he didn't. I'm just saying LeBron watched that and got motivated, and I think we saw, you know,
I think that LeBron was incredibly motivated, as we saw with him making up that people were calling him Wash to motivate himself and like all that stuff all season. Like we saw that last summer. I think he was motivated by people writing him off a little bit. And obviously nobody was like, LeBron sucks now. Sure. But I think that there were questions about his health moving forward, including for me. Like, a groin injury is not anything to joke about. Like, and like back in, especially at his age, like there were real questions about whether or not he was good anymore, but would he be able to sustain it and stay on the court? And because groin injuries can nag, like those can last for years. And like that one was still bothering him throughout the entire playoffs. Like, I think, like we saw with the way that he locked in on defense all season and the way that just he clearly was locked in on winning with this team, like regardless of statistical production, whatever, like he just wanted to dominate teams and be able to rest the fourth quarter. And like, I think that this is, you know, obviously I did not watch him as closely when he was with the Cavs and Heat, but like, I think this is probably as motivated as he has ever been for an entire season outside of like maybe that second year in Miami. Like, I remember just like he was just a, you know, like a world killer that year. But like, I think other than that, he's always had a tendency to kind of pick and choose his spots and load manage a little bit at times. And like, that's smart for the longevity that you talk about. But this year was the first time that I really, and even in games, he would load manage a little bit. Like, he very clearly would try and set AD up, start off games and try and build a lead that way without really having to assert himself, and then if necessary he would kind of take over in the fourth quarter. But like, I also think like just the way that he was locked in on defense, the way that he was leading this team offensively, agreeing to play point guard and kind of handle the majority of the possessions and things like that, that takes a toll. Like, I think he was as locked in this year as he's basically ever been.
At the end of the day, I think that,
but what about the beginning?
No, like at the end of the day, like I was going to say, Jordan is my GOAT right now, but I think LeBron is going to continue to produce at this level, or at least a level pretty close to this, for, I would say, maybe three more years, because it doesn't look like he's slowing down unless he has some type of, you know, injury that keeps him out, like a muscle injury like Karl Malone kind of got, I think, around age 38.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think LeBron's going to continue to produce, and he's going to win a couple more, if not a few more, and I think he's eventually going to be the GOAT, so. You know, kind of hard.
Yeah, that's the thing about the whole discussion. It's like, Jordan's career is over. LeBron's isn't. Like, it's not a fair comparison yet, because you got to see where he leaves off almost. Because, like, would you, like, I forget how many titles Jordan had won by like 34, 35, but he was at what, 4 or 5? Like, would we consider him the undisputed GOAT if he had not come back and won those other ones? Like, you know, I don't know. Like, maybe, but I think that it's hard to say until someone's actually done where they rank in the discussion. Although yeah, I mean, I think he is the GOAT, but I'm a little biased by being a child of the 2000s.
All right, two main talking points, and then we'll wrap this up. So first of all, where does this title rank all time with LeBron's titles and team in general? Harrison, you can lead this off.
So you mean in terms of like rank among his teams or like where it ranks among his achievements, like that kind of thing?
Achievements. However you interpret that. Where does this title rank for you? Like for me, I think 2016 is number one.
I agree.
I would definitely, because of his age and I mean the mentality that you needed to do in this bubble, I mean, it's got to be two or three for me. It's either second over his first title ever or right behind that, in my opinion.
I feel like it's 2016, and then I feel like it's his first title just because, like, that was such – like, there was so much pressure on that team as, like, not only were they the favorites, but also people were doubting them. It was, like, this weird thing of, like, does LeBron have what it takes to win it? But they were under this, like, incredible spotlight and, like, light bulb and whatever because he hadn't won one yet and was, like, quote-unquote unproven. And so, like, I think you have to kind of put that one there just because it's the first one. Like, that's huge. Like, I mean, obviously, the only thing that can top that is coming back from down 3-1 against, like, arguably the greatest team ever. So, or at least by record, the greatest team ever. Like, the greatest regular season team ever. And I think this one ranks third still because, like, the other two Miami ones – the other one Miami one. I gave him bonus credit for an extra one, I guess. The other one in Miami, I don't think can touch this just because this is coming to a new team. This is not coming to Pat Riley's culture. This is not like coming with like this is a team where you came and you failed not just by not winning the finals the first year, but by not making the playoffs. And to come in at this age and build it up into what he has, like I think it definitely at least ranks it third, if not second. Like you could talk me into second because of all the stuff that I just mentioned, but I think it would be like kind of disrespectful to like him, like what it takes to actually get over the hump the first time.
So for his achievements, I'm just going to interpret that as meaning rings and championships, which he has four. I say four, number four. I think number three is I think one is against the Cavs in 2016. I think two is his first one because, I mean, it was his first one. He got over the hump. It was like when he finally did it, and it was kind of in classic fashion, right? Played a good Pacers team, had some big buckets. If I remember correctly, I thought that was the year he had that, like, game winner layup to the basket. The year after? What about the game winner against?
Actually, they didn't even win that year. That was just against the Pacers.
You're talking about the game winner against Chicago.
That was first rounder.
Oh, yep, was
Chicago.
That?
There you go.
Okay, yeah, I'm misremembering that. Yeah,
the one against the Pacers was conference final.
Really? I thought he hit two or three in the first round against him. I don't think he hit any.
Nah, look. No, you're talking about.
Now I want to go back and.
Yeah, well, look, when you get a chance, go look it up. It's either the year – I think it's either 12, 13, or 14. Which years did they play the Pacers? They played them twice.
It was 13. Both years they won the title, I'm pretty sure. Or maybe it was the year that they lost to the Spurs and the year that they won against the Spurs.
Right. I'm trying to figure that out right now. Let's see. Because it's either going to be – it's going to be 13 and then either 12 or 14. Either way, 13. I think it was 13 and 14. I think it was 13 and 14. Anyways, my point is LeBron was playing great basketball. He finally got over the hump and won his first title. So for me, that's second. First being the Cavs, over the Warriors, and then second being the one over the Thunder. Third, I was going to say the first one against the Spurs would be fourth because he got saved by Ray Allen. His legacy would be quite different had Ray Allen – had Chris Bosh.
One of the most incredible shots in NBA history, not even just like finals history.
It's one of the most memorable shots, bar none. So Ray Allen saved him. I was going to say that that's fourth, but they repeated, right? And he hit that big shot game seven to seal it, I think 93-89 or whatever it was. So, like, the Heat, LeBron getting his first repeat and hitting that big shot puts it over. The reason I put it fourth is kind of what Zach said. I mean, at this point, it's like, look, he teamed with a top five player in the league. Who was tailor-made for him. So, I mean, they were almost favorites as soon as they did it. This was a little different than when he joined with the Heat because that required other people making decisions, namely Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. With the Lakers, he just kind of strong-armed the front office and made it happen, right? Made the trade happen. So it's like –
Well, Anthony Davis had to want it too.
Well, I mean, who's gonna not want playing with LeBron James? So – and Anthony Davis had already
– A lot of players don't.
Well, we can have that discussion, but the point is – he was able to pull the strings for his situation, and the situation that he pulled the strings for was tailor-made for him. So it was like, it was kind of a foregone conclusion that they would make the finals at the very least, in my opinion. The Clippers forming kind of made it, oh, what's going to happen? But I still think the Lakers were the favorite. And then on top of that, the main reason is he had a break, you know? I mean, you give LeBron James 5 months off, 4 months off to reprogram and reset, and good luck, you know?
Well, I look forward to him finding this clip and using it as motivation for a repeat next year. And like, since he's apparently looking for any possible slight to declare himself washed. So,
well, the luster has just worn off, right? It's like we know how great he is. That's why I think those other ones were memorable, because there was still a little bit of doubt. But now it's like, I mean, come on.
I fell in the basket. It was game one, 2013, against the Pacers. It was just a layup, but it was for at the buzzer to win.
92-90 or something, right?
I'm pretty sure that's the one you're talking. It was 102-103. Yeah.
102. Yeah, yeah. Oh, because I think they were about to lose.
Good call on that. Good call on that.
I think they were about to lose. Is it on the left side of the
lane? They were. They were down.
Yeah. Was it the left side of the lane that he cuts down baseline pass?
I don't know where it was.
Okay. Yeah. So
I bet Frank Vogel only
– it says a two-point layup. Two-point layup.
Frank Vogel, only now that he has finally won a title, is going to stop probably having nightmares about that shot. Like,
probably. And look, Frank, and that's another reason, by the way, we haven't even talked about Frank Vogel, man. Frank Vogel did an incredible job, specifically like against the Rockets. Look, as someone who rooted for a team that had one of the most stubborn head coaches in the playoffs, that, you know, stereotypically stubborn coaches in the playoffs, and Mike D'Antoni.
Look, I understand. I understand. Okay.
You know, look, we saw Frank Vogel. I've seen it. Make the adjustment immediately, didn't waste any time. And I said, a lot of people on Twitter made fun of me for saying the Lakers are going small, but that was their version of going small. And there's this writer who's really good for the Lakers. I forget his name, but he was arguing the opposite. He was saying the Lakers' best chance is to stay big and that they'd lose if they went small.
Oh, you're talking about Krangis, Tim. Yeah.
And I was telling my friend Red94, who was also big in Rockets Twitter, if you have ever seen his account.
Yes, I believe he blocked me during the Lakers series. I don't really know. I think he blocked Silver Screen and Roll. And honestly, I can't blame him. So.
I think y'all took one of his tweets and blasted him.
Well, look, you know, I'm not going to claim credit for that because there are two other people that send the tweets from the account. So I don't remember if that was specifically me or not, but it was probably warranted, I will say.
But regardless, I was talking with him and I was like, look, if they go small, they're going to win it. So anyways. Frank Vogel made those adjustments. Frank Vogel's a good coach. And, you know, I thought that was a great fit and kind of an underrated little storyline to their title. But number four for me.
Out of all LeBron's coaches outside of Spoelstra, Vogel has to be the second best, right? He's second best for me. I have him better than Woodson, Blatt, any other slum bag you put out there.
I mean, Ty Lue, I think, is a good coach. But, like, I think a little bit underappreciated now.
We don't know
now.
That, I think.
Yeah, but, like, at the same time, like, I think he could maybe have an argument. I still would lean Vogel, but I think that you could make an argument for Ty Lue. But, yeah, I agree that Spoelstra is number one, at least for now. Like, if Frank figures out a way – if they go back-to-back and, like, there's more great adjustments from him, then maybe he can jump up to first. But, like, Spoelstra is definitely ahead of him for now. It's like Spoelstra might be the best coach in the league.
Very good. So, let's wrap up with this for Harrison. Biggest surprise on the year through the Lakers season or just NBA in general? What were some of your biggest surprises that stuck out to you?
Biggest surprise is just Rajon Rondo in general. Like, he was I know that you said, like, you couldn't – or it was you, Roosh, that said that you couldn't believe that people were doubting Rondo. You did not watch every Laker game the last 2 years. Like, he was – garbage, like actively detrimental to your chances of win, like bad. Like, he looked like not just like washed, like he was like, or not just done, like he was well done. Like, you left the grill on, you left the lid on, like it was, there was smoke coming out of it. You could see flames. Like, that was where Rajon Rondo was the last 2 years. And then he comes in against the Rockets and turns into an all-star basically out of nowhere. Like, after a bad first game, he comes in and he's just like, all right, I get it now. And then just turns it on, he didn't play good every single game during the run, but it's like what I started telling people was basically like, when playoff Rondo shows up, he is like, it's a magical force of nature, like coming off of the bench for you. And when he doesn't look that great. But when playoff Rondo is there, like he was in game six, like he was for a bunch of games against the Rockets, like he was at times against the Nuggets, like, I mean, he's incredible. And the fact that he set a record for most assists off the bench in NBA history in the playoffs, like without playing in the first round, is like, I mean, that's incredible. Like, he was arguably, like, him going from a player who Lakers fans, not me, I didn't go this far, but there were Lakers fans arguing he should be cut, like, to becoming a guy that was, like...
Yeah, I heard plenty of that.
Like, arguably their third best player at times. Like, certainly at times, if not, I'd say KCP for the whole playoffs was probably their third best player, but Rondo has an argument. And, like, the biggest surprise for me was definitely that. And then, I guess, just, like, otherwise around the NBA, like, honestly, I was surprised at the Clippers, like, choking the way that they did. Like, I really thought, like, everyone was preparing. I was following along with them all year, like, trying to get ready for that eventual Western Conference Finals we all thought was coming, like, trying to really get a good sense for that team. And, like, I didn't see that type of collapse coming until it did. And so I think those were probably, like, biggest, like, Lakers surprise, biggest NBA surprise in general.
Yeah, man. For me, look, to the Rondo point, I saw the same thing. There's a guy, Sam Quinn, on Twitter who was dogging Rondo hard. And I just kept saying, man, you must have been either
– was that guy.
Either too young or maybe you just don't remember, but – Rajon Rondo gets down in the playoffs, period.
He does, and he always has, but he was old was the difference this time. And I didn't know after watching what he has done the last couple of years if he could still upshift that gear. I figured he would be better, but to be what he was, like, that should not be possible at his age.
Well, no, I mean, look up how old he is. I don't think he's that old. I think he's still
– He's 34.
34. He's a point guard. Look, if you're a point guard –
Yeah, he is.
He's a point guard that can't shoot. And then learn how to shoot for the playoffs.
Point guards after 32.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say he figured out how to shoot
for a little bit, but
he figured out how to shoot around 36, 35%. That's really all he needs to do. But my point is, look, as a Rockets fan,
back in 2015,
going into the series with the Lakers, I was excited because, first of all, I wanted to see Harden versus LeBron. But second, I thought, look, the Lakers have one guy who can create, and that's LeBron. I was not anticipating Rondo being ready. I thought he was still going to be out a couple weeks and was going to miss most of the series. And so once I heard Rondo was back, I thought, oh, shit, now they have another guy that can feed Anthony Davis. Because my whole thing was, look, you're not going to limit Anthony Davis, but you can make him less effective even if he gets his numbers by virtue of the fact that he needs the ball to him to be effective. Mm-hmm. Now you add Rondo, who is running around and doing a lot of things that LeBron needs someone else to do. And pretty much circling back to the conversation we've had, LeBron's too good for that. So that didn't surprise me. But my biggest surprise with the Lakers, nothing really specifically surprised me with the Lakers. I'd say the ironic or funny twist to it all is now Dwight Howard gets his ring with the Lakers, and now he's more beloved by the franchise – I'm sorry, by the fan base than he ever was, right? So that's
probably the franchise too, to be honest.
Probably the franchise too. And then biggest NBA surprise, it's kind of hard not to pick – you know, both the Heat and the Nuggets, what they did. I think what's most surprising about that is Milwaukee just getting rolled. Like, you know, like the Nuggets went seven. They needed a miraculous comeback, but Milwaukee just got rolled. And it was one of those things, Zach, I remember you and I talked about, yo, Miami could do this. But even when you look at things on paper and you think, yo, this could happen, it might be a tough six-game series, maybe a tough seven-game series, but it doesn't just – A, rarely happens, and B, it's rarely to the extent that the underdog straight up rolls, you know, the top dog. But NBA in general, one thing to look out for, it wasn't a surprise to me necessarily because I've been watching these guys, but Luka and Kristaps Porzingis are going to be one hell of a duo, and I think they showed that in the first round. So.
No, they're really – and Luka especially is just, like, unbelievable. Like, ridiculous. To be as good as he is just two years in is – yeah.
Whatever anybody says about Luka, yes, I was just as high as them on anybody. Sure, it's nothing to be that crazy proud about. So many people are in my same shoes. Yes, we thought he was going to be this good eventually maybe, but to get there in year two, to be a top five type player, to be an MVP candidate in year two – and to be able to prove that and to translate that into playoffs, no, nobody saw that coming. You can't see greats coming that early. It just it's rare. It's a huge shocker. It's a huge surprise. And anybody who says, "Oh, I projected him to go from a top 40 player to a top 5 player in 1 year," no, that doesn't happen. That's why he's the most improved player to me, and that's why that jump to go from top 40 player to basically a good starter that can put up okay stats on a bad team last year, a 32-win team, to an amazing player, all NBA to MVP, like, it shouldn't even be a conversation. That's why people come up with these narratives and all these other things to try to justify. It's simple. Give credit where it's due. Let that jump happen. Outside of that, though, obviously injuries are the cop-out. They always happen in the NBA. So it derails teams like the Warriors. They were the biggest shock that got impacted by injuries the most from the beginning of the year. Definitely thought they should have been a playoff team. And Steph struggled a little bit when he didn't have much help. So that also surprised me. But honestly, I mean, I'm with Roosh. I mean, the only huge major surprise was just the Bucks not getting any better in the playoffs. Like,
arguably Giannis getting worse.
There you go. You said it. That's a perfect way to end right there.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's
arguably
tough. Arguably
getting worse.
Yeah. I don't know what you do. Like, I mean, they're going to – like, if they don't do something this next year, like, I think you almost have to – assume Giannis is going to leave. Like, I don't know where to, obviously. Like, I think Lakers will have a chance. I think, like, it sounds like Dallas will really have a chance. You know, I think it was Windhorse today said that Dallas was at the front of the line on a podcast. God. But, yeah, I mean, I'd have to go and look at the exact comment. But, like, I mean, like, I think that, like, the noise is going to get really loud if they don't do something in the playoffs the next year, and they don't possibly, if they don't make a move this summer to go and get, like, you know, I know Chris Paul was getting connected to them a bunch through speculation. I don't think there's been any reporting yet, but like
they got to make them happy. They got to make them happy. On that note, Harrison, we appreciate you coming on and fun conversation. Happy for you guys out there. Enjoy this run. I mean, you got any media coming up, any big stories you're writing about this title run at all?
No, I think a lot of the big stuff I already wrote. Like, I'm going to be doing a primer on, like, Lakers free agency and stuff. So, like, who could leave, who's still locked in, who's going to leave, like, that kind of, with a little bit of thoughts. Like, but, you know, that, like, the story that I'm most proud of recently was the one that I just did on the return of Lakers exceptionalism. That's at silverscreenroll.com. You can go there and read it. But yeah, I mean, we're just going to be, you know, like, covering the draft. The Lakers have a pick in this draft somehow, despite, you know, basically giving up everything to New Orleans, and then, like, covering free agency. And just, like, I mean, obviously I think Anthony Davis is going to stay. I would be, like, floored if he left or even really considered other offers. But, you know, can the Lakers find some ways to improve this offseason? Like, I do think that, you know, they have some guys, some tradable contracts. They have some assets left. Like, they might be – and also, you know, with the way that the cap's probably going to drop, they may be able to compete for some of these veterans that are kind of priced out a little bit, like, aren't going to be able to get maybe what they thought and decide to just go somewhere and try to win. You know, like – I'm excited for this offseason. I think that it's going to be fun.
Awesome. Well, enjoy it, man.
All right,
take it
easy, guys.
Thank you, Harrison. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, no problem.
You are listening to The Noble and Roosh Show, brought to you by Ball is Life. You just heard Harrison Fagan talking to Roosh and Noble. After this brief break, we will be right back.
Welcome back to The Noble and Roosh Show, hosted by Ball is Life. We just had a nice discussion with Harrison Fagan regarding the Los Angeles Lakers and their title run. And now we're going to spend some time talking about the Lakers offseason and what that might look like. So, Zach, talk to me.
Free agency, we're going to dive into some trade targets and then talk about any draft options they might have and kind of just talk about the overall offseason outlook for these teams. So, first line of business, I would say, are the player options for the Lakers free agents. We got Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 1 year, $8 million, and then Rajon Rondo with a $2.5 million player option. Do you think either of those guys accept that?
I could see it. I think it'll be tough to gauge what the market's going to look like, obviously, especially because of, you know, all the COVID stuff. We don't know. I think the salary cap isn't going to drop too drastically. I'm not sure, though. So, look, I mean, it's late in their career. Does Rondo think he's going to get another long-term fat deal? Probably not. So, does he value coming back, you know, and trying to win another title? And same goes for KCP. I could see KCP being in line for some decent money relative to his position. I mean, he's a 3-and-D wing. He showed up big in the finals. So I can see him having a high price tag. But again, depending on what the market is and depending on how long of a contract teams will be willing to give him, I mean, you don't know. 8.2 is not that bad. So I don't know. We'll see. I do think that the best way to get the gauge is once like the first person gets their contract, obviously, right? That's like the measuring stick, the thermometer for how you decide whose value is what. So we'll see what 3-and-D wings are going for in the Corona offseason era. And then I think we'll have like a clearer picture of that.
Yeah, it's going to be wild with the coronavirus offseason. It's going to be unlike anything. I hope they come out with the CBA and the salary cap sooner than later. I'm going to guarantee, I'm going to put a noble stamp on Rondo re-signing. I just don't see him getting any more money than $2.5 million. I think it'd be kind of weird and dumb of him. I know he wants to play as long as he can. I think he really enjoyed the type of year he had, and I think he sees himself doing that again, especially with this Lakers team. The contract I'm up in arms about is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, because I think he's a guy that could demand at least a 10 to 15 year, 1 year deal, if not 2-3 year deal with the team as a good role player. But I think he wants to be back. I don't think he wants the pressure of going out and having to try to earn a bigger deal than that right now. I'd probably lean towards, 60-40 saying he's going to opt into that. I think the Lakers want him back at the number, don't you?
Yeah, I do. So that's what I'm saying, and that's kind of what I was saying earlier. Like, it's going to depend on the market, right? If there's something he just can't turn down, like 13 to 14 a year with a decent length on the contract, I could see him leaving. But if it's going to be something that's kind of more or less what he's already getting, I could see him possibly staying. How old is KCP? Do we know? Because if he's
only 26, I think.
26. So, well, I mean, that kind of
changes. Right. It's 27, and he'll be 28 by next year.
Okay, well, that kind of changes the calculus a little bit. I mean, then this might be one of his last chances to get that fat, 4 or 5 year deal, and he's already got a ring to boot, so, that's checked off the box. So I think he's a coin flip, man. But like I said, I think it's going to be what is the market for guys like him? How many guys like him are available? Is he going to be the cornerstone 3-and-D wing on the market? Because then he could get some very big money, right? Is he going to be a run of the mill 3-and-D wing relative to the market? Maybe he opts back in, but I'd say 50-50. But I mean, on the base of it, man, you think he's going to leave almost because he's going to get paid. I feel like he's going to get paid. I feel like Daryl Morey and the Rockets would throw him money.
That's a great point.
If they had it, of course.
I'd sell high if I'm KCP. I mean, what's the most you'd spend on KCP? I'd give him a 3-year, 12 a year deal. I mean, if I'm any team, to be honest, I mean, valuable role player.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's reasonable. So when you take that, then you think, well, there's probably going to be one or two teams that are willing to overpay, right? So I could see him getting more. Like I said, 13, 14, what's the market, though? I remember there was that 1 year where guys like Tim Hardaway Jr. were getting 17. And I think Alan Crabb was getting 17, 18. Evan Turner, those guys were getting
summer 16, years. Baby.
Summer 16, Ryan Anderson got 20 ends per year for 4 years, right? So it just depends, we'll see. My guess is that with COVID that the value will be down a little bit. So, but I thought that the Lakers also had more players under player option. Am I wrong with that?
Nope. The only other guy is Anthony Davis. And he's got a $28 million option. I think he opts into that just to buy another year. I mean, sure, he could maybe make 34. I think that would be his max dollar amount. So maybe he opts out and signs a 1 year deal minimum so he can actually go test free agency. I can see himself wanting to have the power being LeBron's old, but it's clutch agency. So you never know what they're going to do. What do you see him doing? I mean,
I don't see any way Anthony Davis leaves. I think the only thing is he might renegotiate.
I think he might one more year.
Oh, yeah, for sure one more year. And I think the only thing he might do is try to renegotiate for more money for this specific year, maybe even renegotiate for, more money on a lengthier deal. But I don't think there's any way he's gone. He spent his whole career underachieving, unable to carry a franchise. I feel like now he wins the ring. How could you want it any other way other than just coasting with LeBron, all that pressure's off your shoulders. You delivered. Like, I can't see him wanting to go anywhere else. So maybe what I'm looking at is incorrect, but what I'm looking at says that JaVale and Avery Bradley are also under player option. Is that right?
No, that's not right. No.
What are their situations?
So JaVale's locked in for 4.2 for one more year, but the Lakers have 5 unrestricted free agents, all right? So you got Jared Dudley, you got Dwight Howard, Deion Waiters, Markieff Morris, and then J.R. Smith. Are you re-signing all of those guys, any of those guys, or what do you think with that group?
Well, again, it's, you know, what is Dwight Howard worth? Are they going to be able to get him? I think they got him for the minimum, right? So is Dwight Howard now okay with his ring?
Let's say they have $10 million to split between, like, 5 guys, you know? It's got to be a bunch of minimum deals.
Right. Is that their situation? I don't know the Lakers cap situation off the top of my head.
100%. Yeah, that's essentially it.
Okay, so they're back in a situation where they have minimum deals. They don't have the MLE or anything to work with.
Yeah, they'll have the MLE for one player, really.
Okay, so I wonder what the mid level if they got to go with a bunch of minimum deals, assuming that these players will sign back. I could see them going back to the well for JR, Jared Dudley, and Markieff. I don't think Dwight Howard will get the minimum. I think Dwight Howard will come down to whether he's willing to take the minimum to stay with the team. What about you?
Yeah, honestly, I'm okay if they re-sign all those guys. I really am. But personally, because I don't think any of those guys are getting a bigger deal besides Markieff Morris. I think Markieff's the only guy that could probably demand more than what they could afford. But
you don't think
he want to just keep his role with L.A. or does he want – no, hell no. I don't see Dwight Howard getting – Dwight Howard only works in L.A., dude, and with LeBron. Like, name me a team that's going to want to sign Dwight Howard. I mean, outside of the Warriors. Maybe the Warriors. That's it. That's the only team I can think of.
Maybe the Warriors. I mean, look, let me think about this for a second. But anyone that – I mean, if we're talking the minimum, what are we talking, 1-point-something million? 1.2, 1.4, something like that, right? And all I'm saying is I think Dwight is at a level where he can still get like 4 or 5. He's a good backup center. He's a good starting center.
Right.
He's not a star anymore, but I think he could get 4 or 5 million.
I think the Lakers could match that.
Okay. But see, if they were willing to spend that kind of money, I think they could keep Dwight. And then I could see Markieff taking more, but the Morris twins are old, man. And Markieff, he would really have to sell his veteran presence in the playoffs, because throughout the regular season, I don't think he was impressive enough to get too much money. More than the minimum, though, I can see him getting more than the minimum. So tell me the Miami Heat wouldn't want Dwight Howard for 4 M's?
Hell no. Nah, they'd want Myers back before that. They want Myers back before that. And I think Myers is going to be fetching good money. I think Myers will get good money. So tell me this, though. Did you look over any of the unrestricted free agents, or should I list some off that I think would be good targets for the Lakers?
So the guy that I had at the top of my list was Danilo Gallinari. I could see Gallinari because he made a comment about how he, at this point in his career, winning a championship is what matters.
I saw the comment.
Yeah. So look, dude, he could shoot. He could play. Like,
oh man, I saw the comment, but like, what is that dollar amount? How small are we talking, Danilo?
I'm just saying.
Get 20 mil from somebody for 1 year.
Hey, I'm just saying, man. He can take the MLE to go win the title.
That Lakers fans would be orgasming for days. I mean, if that was the case. Like, I'd orgasm for him if they got Danilo Gallinari. That would just be so stupid. And that would be a big three right there. If you added Danilo Gallinari to – that literally is better than Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. That's literally better than Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, those three. I mean, Danilo Gallinari is still a really good NBA player, and he's got 2-3 more years left. But, yes, I agree. That's the pipe dream being he threw that out in the atmosphere. Here's a couple names I got. I think they should take chances on high upside, but it's time to go get Melo his title. I want Melo to go to L.A. I really do.
The last storyline that I care for is Melo going to L.A. and getting a title with LeBron. That would be okay. That's the hater in me.
This really comes down to, though, what players do we want to give titles to, you know, because that's what they're signing up for. who wants to go be a David West type and go get titles? Guys that come to mind: Kyle Korver, Tyler Johnson, Justin Holliday, Langston Galloway, Marco Bellinelli, Pat Connaughton. Those type of guys are all excellent targets and fits for the Lakers.
Kent Bazemore, I thought was a pretty decent one.
He's on my list.
You know,
Andre Roberson.
Justin Holliday, although he'll be highly sought after. Marco Bellinelli, all you need, all the team that with LeBron needs is guys that can shoot and decently defend. So anyone that can even decently shoot, but you give him a guy like Marco Bellinelli, you know, like we've been talking about, even Wesley Matthews, although I think he has a player option. I could see a guy like Alec Burks going to LA and just balling out off the bench, you know. So
Alec Burks is going to want to get paid. I don't think he's an option.
Well, will he get paid, though? He always bounces around and always ends up at the end of a bench.
Yeah, and I think he's just coming off a big injury.
So maybe he won't get paid.
So of those guys, I mean, I think all the guys we're naming, like Kent Bazemore, Melo, I think all those guys are upgrades from the guys that are losing. Absolutely, right?
It depends on which guys we're talking about. I mean, I think Rondo was huge. I think Dwight Howard was huge. If we're talking Markieff Morris, I think he's replaceable.
So the guys, yeah, we're talking Dwight, we're talking JR, KCP. Those are the guys we're talking.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say that there's an upgrade from a championship-winning team for me. You know, maybe I'm like leaning a little too conservative on that. But when you win it all, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And they didn't have any holes really, so I don't know.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? Would it be an upgrade, like on paper in 2K?
That's a good point. And I'll tell you, that's a big problem the Warriors have faced. They've always struggled finding those guys on the margins and always struggled, like the Dronus Direktbos of the world, and just filling in those holes with trying to replace David. Well, they couldn't do it. And so when their studs did go down, they didn't have the three-point shooters and they didn't have the fit. So the Lakers, do you just bring back the guys from the well and just keep it rolling? I don't know. But if you can get a guy like Kent Bazemore, who still has younger legs and more athletic and can keep up the defense, what if you can steal a Jeff Green from the Rocket, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that they, more than anything, they need to focus on perimeter players or like 3-and-D type guys. If I was them, I might. Yeah, you know, like I might stay away from a Jeff Green because his skill set isn't necessarily needed. And he's not much on defense in the three-point shot, streaky his whole career. I think a guy like dude, Kent Bazemore, anyone who's 6'5 and above that can switch positions defensively, that can run the perimeter and finish for LeBron and occasionally create to the hole or attack a closeout, like that's all he needs. And I think there's a ton of those guys available. Like we said, each one more.
I agree.
You know, Kent Bazemore, even a guy like Rodney Hood, you know, although I don't know, I think he has a player option. Garrett Temple. You know, if Wes Matthews opts out of his deal, see, I don't know these guys' numbers, but if they're on minimum deals or close to minimum deals, I can see them opting out and going and joining up with LeBron, you know?
I think Wes Matthews is a good idea, but I just think they can get a little younger than that. And I don't know when Wes Matthews' legs are going out, and he's always been injury-riddled. Like, I'm trying to get guys, to your point, that, I mean, have as fresh as legs as possible. They can still stroke the hell out of the ball. And, I mean, maybe there's some upside to them yet. Because, I mean, you got to think about injuries, too.
Solomon Hill's a decent name. I was going to say that I just saw somebody. Oh, do you think Jay Crowder is going to get paid? Because if not, then you could go after a Jay Crowder.
Oh, yeah. Jay Crowder's getting money. He's earned it this offseason, this postseason.
What do you think Jay Crowder is getting?
So I would pay Jay Crowder personally a minimum of 3 years, 10 per. So 30 mil, but I could see teams going up 12 to 13 for Jay Crowder for a three-year deal.
How old is Jay Crowder?
He's only 30, probably. Let's see.
Three years, 10 apiece for Jay Crowder after age 30?
What do you think? 30 on the dot. 30 on the nugget.
Today is his birthday?
No, but he's only 99 days old, you know. But he shot 45% with the Miami Heat this year. I mean, the dude boosted his stock. If he's on a team that can space, dude, 3-and-D in today's league, let's go.
Look, Jay Crowder, for his career, I might be wrong about this. You got the numbers in front of you. I don't. But I think he's only shot over 35%. No. I think he's only shot over 35% from three once in his career before his run with Miami. And his run with Miami is still on a small sample size. Am I right?
You said over what percentage?
Over 35% from three only once in his career, aside from this year in Miami.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. So I think what he did in Miami was an outlier.
He's a guy that can hit it.
I think what Miami did was an outlier, and I think that, you know, him in the bubble was an outlier. I think he's one of those guys that everyone loves, and they're like, yo, we need Jay Crowder. And for the most part, when you look at it, he's only really been on one championship team, caliber team with Cleveland until now with Miami. So maybe it was him. I personally, the Rockets used to saute the Utah Jazz in the playoffs, and Jay Crowder was a part of that. And I thought that Jay Crowder was a huge weakness. So like, I got to see a lot of Jay Crowder in clutch situations. Maybe Utah was a bad fit. But man, 10 years for like an aged role player is, I feel like that's a lot. Maybe my grasp of that is wrong. Is you know,
age
not good.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm just saying. 10 apiece. I feel like you give a guy.
His nickname is the Beast.
The Beast.
Anyways, let's move on to trade targets, okay? Do you have any names down for possible trade targets for the Lakers?
So, for the Lakers, I mean, look, they pretty much traded anything they had that was worth anything to get Anthony Davis. So, I really don't know how active they can be in trades unless, like, I just don't think it would make sense to swap their role players as trade bait. You know, like, you're going to need Caruso, whoever else they have under contract, like Rondo. Like, I just don't see any trade package that would be worth whatever, that would be worth a team accepting and shipping out anything that would be of value to the Lakers. So, no, I don't have any trades now for the Lakers. I think they bring the core back. You know, they try to re-sign most of their veterans. They fill in the holes with other veterans, and they keep it moving.
I love it. So, I'll tell you this. You're dead on. They don't have shit for assets. I'll give you that. That's the thing, though. So they got to find guys on bad deals, and they got to go get crafty and just try to upgrade any way they can. I mean, they're going to be giving up late draft picks, and Danny Green's their biggest bargaining chip. I mean, if KCP opts in, he'll be a bargaining chip for sure, but it's the Lakers, man. They're always big game hunting. They're always going to be active. I truly think these guys I'm about to mention are all possibilities with the assets the Lakers have, because they're not. It's not going to take much to get them. Okay, so the first one, I want to get the banana boat a title. I want to get them a title. So bring on Chris Paul and Melo. Okay, you're trading for Chris Paul. You're going to sign Melo. All the Lakers have to do is give up a first-round pick, maybe a second as well, and that gets it done for OKC. They're going to just unload CP3 for very little, I guarantee it. Might be two first-round picks, late picks, but, yeah, it's happening. So why wouldn't the Lakers do that?
Man, that makes sense to me. I just don't know why OKC would accept late-round picks for Chris Paul.
Who's going to give him a better – I mean,
New York?
Think about it. Yeah, they'll give them the number 8 pick. It'll be so New York of them.
I mean, even their future draft capital is almost guaranteed to be good, you know, because they're going to keep sucking. So, I don't know. I can see the Knicks trying to absorb that. Even Miami, you know, maybe Milwaukee.
Miami is way too good and way too smart to go after Chris Paul. They don't need him, okay? Milwaukee, though, they're a team that could offer more. They could throw, like, maybe a Dante DiVincenzo piece out here and dangle that bit. Because their draft capital would be the same, you know, both really good teams, late pick. What kind of young asset can you throw in to entice OKC as well? But outside of LA and Milwaukee, I don't see any other teams. Maybe Dallas trying to get Chris Paul, just beefing up with any talent.
Dallas has been rumored to have been in on him in the past, and I never put anything past Mark Cuban, especially if it has the double effect of spurning the Rockets. So that could happen. I don't know, man. Maybe could you see, I'm just spitballing here, but like a Phoenix, maybe like, you know, trying to pair him with Devin Booker and Ayton, or I'm trying to think.
It'd be sexy.
You know?
I think it'd be smart of them, but at the same time, because I just think Chris Paul makes everybody around him better, and especially in this stage of his career, he's accepted the role with OKC. So I think more Philadelphia. They have the young assets. If you dangled a Tybull or a Zaire Smith, that's going to be tough to beat. You know, Kyle Kuzma, that's not going to entice shit. But the whole goal of OKC right now is to tank. And if you go grab Kyle Kuzma, you are going to suck ass.
That's awesome.
Here's your asset. Take a Kuzma.
So at the end of the day, I just feel like I was just going to say, at the end of the day, I feel like a Lakers package is the baseline package that's available. You know, like they could probably get that elsewhere if they shop around hard enough.
100%. That's the worst package OKC would say yes to, and I agree. But here's one that's more viable. Let's bring – this is the only other big name they can come up with, okay? Let's bring Kevin Love to L.A.
How would they get that done?
I mean, obviously, whatever – cap filler they can come up with, okay? And then I don't think the Cavs are going to get much back in return. It's just offloading his contract. So whatever Danny Green and garbage you can come up with, that would be as easy as it gets, right, to bring in Kevin Love.
Would Danny Green have to be involved because he's the only, like, role player with a sizable enough contract to make it work?
Oh, for sure. Danny Green and KCP alone that gets that deal done. So that would be basically the trade. And I think that's worth it 100% because if you're the Lakers, you just got to do whatever you can to win now. And so the trade basically be Danny Green, KCP for Love.
I mean, I just can't see how they get better losing their 2 3-and-D wings and replacing them with, you know, a stretch four that's had injury issues, especially when you've already got Anthony Davis. You know what I mean? I feel like that would be mixing it up. Perhaps it could happen if we're having fun or if we're messing around on 2K. I just feel like that would go against. It would just be weird, you know. They just won a championship with a specific formula. They can recycle that formula, but this is like going, you know, opposite of that formula almost. Like clunking it up, getting too big, a little slower on the perimeter. So. I would veto that trade.
All right, very good. I can accept that. I just think you got to do whatever you can. LeBron's got to decline at some point. You got to do whatever you can to prolong this thing. And Anthony Davis has had injuries in the past. So as much talent as you can to keep this afloat. I don't think LeBron's declining anytime soon, but you got to be prepared for it. You just got to ride it out, you're right, and get it in touch for Bronny and let Anthony Davis be the king of L.A. That's the key. Anthony Davis is going to be the king of L.A. It's whatever it makes him happy, you know?
There you go.
So lastly, let's wrap up with this. The only draft pick the Lakers have, they don't have a second-round pick. They have number 28 of the first round. Do you have any ideas here? I know you're not a huge draft guy, but otherwise I'll just spitfire.
Yeah, do your thing, baby. I used to be so into the draft, but these days I have not had a pulse on the draft.
No sweat. So just tell me this. What kind of rookie would you want to draft if you were the Lakers?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends, you know. Are they trying to get someone that they can – like, do they feel comfortable with their 1 through 11 right now to pick a project or someone that's more of a development-type player? Or are they looking for somebody that they can throw into the mix to win titles with LeBron? I think that would kind of go into the calculus of who you're going to draft. Because if they're going to go with the latter and get someone they can throw in the mix with LeBron, I think you just, like we've been talking about, 3-and-D and or someone who has the ability to create as well, you know, that kind of prototype.
Completely agree. So unless there's some foreign guy they really believe in or some untapped freshman that came out or a guy like Jay Scrub, he's a JUCO guy that – you're going to send to the South Bay Lakers and maybe comes up towards the end of the year. But you ship him to the G League and hopefully he develops. That's one option. But I truly think there's going to be a few players there that they can actually plug and play. Like there's going to be some polished, well-seasoned guys that can stroke the ball, come in and hopefully be like a Fred VanVleet his year one and really contribute to winning right away. And those guys, for me, there's four of them really. So Aaron Nesmith, I have him way higher on my board. I don't think he's going to drop that far. out of Vandy. He's arguably the best shot in the draft. If they got him, that would be the pipe dream. But these other guys for sure should be around. Grant Riller, Malachi Flynn, and Devon Dotson, all really great guards that I think will come in and could make an immediate impact with the Lakers.
Well, I'm just going to have to trust your judgment on that because, like I said, when it comes to the draft, I'm a rookie these days, baby. I used to be heavy on it, man. I don't know if you ever got on a real GM.
Oh, good.
But I used to be on real GM heavy back in the gap on the Rockets board. And, you know, I'd be all looking into, like, all the prospects and, you know, who's available or all that. But I was always bad at figuring out who was going to be good coming out of college, at least. And, like Luka, man, like, when I heard about Luka, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm sure he'll be good. But I kind of categorized and boxed him into the same stereotype. So, like, I missed on that as well, right? So
no, on that note, let's just wrap this thing up. That's our – Lakers offseason preview for day, I don't know how many, about 844 days away from next season. Buckle up, people. The offseason's going to be lit.
Yeah, man. Hey, thank you for listening. And we'll be back until next time, baby. Bang, bang.